Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear is a free preview of a podcast on our $5 exclusive episodes tier at patreon.com/retronauts. And if you want to hear the whole thing, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and sign up at the $5 exclusive episodes tier. Once you do that, you'll get access to all of our previous exclusive episodes and our future ones as well, as long as you remain a patron, and our exclusive episodes will launch every other Friday. Again, that is the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, and I'll let you get to this free preview of one of our exclusive episodes. The most notable thing on my list here is the anime movie from 1986. It's called Super Mario Brothers: The Great Mission to Rescue Princess Peach. Now, I feel like some version of this had been floating around on the internet for a decade. For the longest time, it was sort of a did-you-know style fact. Like, oh, they made this anime movie and nobody's seen it, and here's like a poster or whatever. And then like bad versions floated online, but then these folks at this this company, or this fan collective called Kineko Video, they were able to get a 16 millimeter print, maybe the only one ever in circulation at this point, and do a full 4K restoration. So if you go on YouTube and you type this this movie title in your search engine, you can pull up a full 4K copy with subtitles and watch it. And I did for the very first time for this podcast. It's an hour long, but it's a very long hour, folks. I'll say that.
An hour long and a long hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I never thought it would be available like this. Like, it was always a did-you-know fact, or, like, the actual first Mario movie came out years before this or whatever. Like, and I always would have wanted to have watched it, but it was not regularly available, and I didn't want to watch, like, a very crappy, like, copy of a copy of a copy of a VHS of it. And this 4K thing, like, this looks better than a lot of, like, Blu-rays you can buy on the shelf now of classic anime. Like, it's amazing to look at as far as a piece of animation history preserved.
Now, Drew, did you check this out by any chance?
Yeah, so back in my old general, the blog I used to keep was Back of the Cereal Box, I did a 3-part series on this using the cruddy full-length movie that was posted on YouTube back in the day with, I think, Korean subtitles stamped onto the bottom you couldn't get rid of, and just trying to dive into it because I didn't know it existed for a long time and then didn't know it was on YouTube, and I kind of love it in that it is this like secret history of Mario, and watching people work with like the mythos of Mario back before there was all that much to work with and having to invent a lot of it in order to like pad out a script. I thought it was super interesting, and then this new restored version is just gorgeous to look at. So I was very excited to rewatch it, which I did in total.
Yeah, I checked it out for the first time yesterday, watched it in full, and I was really grading on a curve because honestly they did the best they could. This movie came out a month after the second Super Mario game in Japan. We know it here is Lost Levels, blah, blah, blah. Doki Doki Panic, we understand.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Please check out like every other episode of this podcast. But yeah, it was made to promote that game, I'm sure. And yes, you're right, Drew. They had very little to go on. Just looking at what was available for these movie creators, essentially looking at what they did and what was available, it looks like they had the game and the box art. And that is why Luigi is wearing blue overalls and a yellow shirt, because I was looking at the box art. Oh, Luigi isn't on there. And then in the game, he has white overalls. Mm-hmm. So they probably thought like, oh, white's not going to be a great color for this character. Let's just go with yellow or something like that. So at this point in time, Luigi being in green had not been codified. Yes, the original Mario Brothers game kind of codified that, but this was a new series for them. Super Mario Brothers.
Right. Similarly, I think that's the reason that the Mushroom Retainers show up as like ladies in waiting, because I think they had that official box art for the original Super Mario Bros. We can see Toad looking like Toad. I think they were just looking at the sprite of who you rescue at the end of the level and decided that that vest was like a bikini top. And they're like, oh, those are obviously supposed to be female characters, which is why I don't think they were taking like I don't think that was like a daring interpretation. They were like, obviously that. They wouldn't have designed this sprite if it wasn't supposed to be female. We'll just make them fully female. So they kind of look like Toadette years before Toadette existed, which is kind of interesting.
And that original Japanese Famicom box art for Super Mario Brothers, like, I believe that is Miyamoto is the credited artist on that.
Yeah, but, yeah, I believe so.
And that it is, I mean, if you want to talk about it in animation terms, off model or on model, like technically it's on model because it's the first drawing and he says what the model is, but retroactively, so much of it is off model. Like Mario's leg, even in the center shot, Mario's legs are in the wrong place. Like they just, it's actually a sort of bad drawing. And Princess Peach is just like, she's a tiny little person, which that's why it's so great. In the movie, they have to recreate the scene of her being held in Bowser's hand.
Yeah.
But you're like, scale-wise, this is really... But that's why Bowser has to just be a magical transforming monster villain. Also because that's just a thing you can... That is in a million kids' cartoons in Japan. And so it's just the easy thing. Like, yeah, the transforming villain. It's like in Puss in Boots, the Toei animation Puss in Boots, that's the villain of that movie, for instance.
Bowser is he's a Daimao, as they call it in Japan. Just like Piccolo, everybody. I'm watching Dragon Ball, the original Dragon Ball, for the first time. So it's funny, like, I think they were changing things internally, because at this point in Nintendo, I know there was art for marketing in Japan, definitely, for selling the characters, putting them on, you know, pencil boards and things like that. So I feel like at this point, at least, Bowser's design had changed. He is no longer the Ox King style character on the cover of the box. And of course, Peach looks like Peach should, but there are still some things that aren't figured out. Like the Koopas still look like they do on the box, and so on. Like there are still some things that were not set in stone when they got a professional artist to come in and redesign the characters for packaging and for merchandise.
I think in the art for what we call the Lost Levels, Peach looks mostly like we think of Peach looking now, but she has those weird like red spots on her cheeks, and I don't know what that's actually supposed to represent. Maybe it's just rosy cheeks, but it looks like acne. And the version you see in this anime is actually the closest we get to like what she looks like now, because they're like, we're not going to do that weird thing with her cheeks because I don't know what it's supposed to look like on screen, but they got rid of it. And it's actually kind of an interesting like juncture into her becoming how we know her now.
Yeah, it's funny in the movie that Mario and Luigi look like, I don't know, halfway there. But the second Peach, and I forget every time, the second Peach shows up, I'm like, that's 95% Peach today. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really want to get into, like, her dress design, is it exactly the same? Like, maybe that's a little off, but it's pretty much Princess Peach.
And I think that's an important thing to, like, because we're doing all this stuff that's, like, non-canon, it's, like, side stuff, and it is not part of, like, the Mario through line necessarily, but even with like Super Show stuff, there's elements of these side projects that kind of actually do end up shaping the series as a whole, so they do matter in ways that I think it's easy for people to forget and like dismiss them as being like just not important to Mario in general. But like in this way and some other ways we'll talk about, I think this did actually shape what Mario became.
It's really interesting to me how this movie stumbled upon things that the American localizers would invent later. I believe American localizers invented the fact like, oh, Mario was a plumber from Brooklyn and then he got, you know, taken to the Mushroom Kingdom, blah, blah, blah. But then later in history, Nintendo puts their foot down and say, it's no, Mario and Luigi born in the Mushroom Kingdom. They're not from Brooklyn. So in this movie, it's a lot like the Super Show in which they go through a warp pipe and end up in this world. Although they're not plumbers. Don't ask me why they're dressed like this. They have a grocery store in the desert. That's what Mario and Luigi do in this movie.
That is very strange. Yeah. You know, it's funny how in the American movies come in, if the big Hollywood money comes in and the Hollywood producers say, hey, actually, that stuff you've buried in the history of the characters, we grew up liking that. It's like in the Sonic movies, Sega spent lots of money and time reteaching kids in America, like, no, he's Eggman, he's Eggman, he's Eggman. And then the movie people come in for this movie, they're like, well, we grew up with it Robotnik and we want to call it Robotnik. And Sega just goes like, yes, sir. Hey, whatever you want. It's Robotnik right here. Yeah.
Yuji Naka's trying to arrange a phone call from prison to complain.